So we, I believe, have Sandra Joyce on the line. Are you there, Sandra?
Yes, I am. Thanks for having me on your show.
Good. And thank you for joining us this morning. And I have Ann Henderson sitting in here, and she's anxious to chat with you.
Good morning.
Oh, good morning. Good to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you again.
So we are speaking to you from your home in Toronto.
That's right.
Good. Well, it's a lovely day here on the island, and I hope it is there for you. I guess just to let our listeners know a bit about you, you've had a varied and fascinating career. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about that and how you came to be so fascinated by British home children and so steeped in that history and to have even written books about it.
Yes. I studied journalism at Ryerson University here in Toronto and went into public relations and publicity and worked in the entertainment business for a while. And then I moved to Germany where I was married and had my kids, and I worked for the German Department of Defense as a liaison between the German contractors and the American Army.
So,
and then after that, I went to into teaching English after I had my children, and then moved back to Canada and ended up working in the entertainment business again, and then working as an English teacher again. Now, my interest in the British home children started when I found out that my my father was one, and it was just by chance when I was out in Halifax at Pier 21 that I found his name on a passenger list, and then saw that there was a group of children, and it stirred my interest, and came back home and contacted my sister, who was working in the immigration department at that time. And she found out that her dad had come over with the Orphan Homes of Scotland, which is now called Quarriers, after the founder. And so we sent to them for information, and they sent us a file back. And this was just astounding to me that my dad had been sent over here as a child and not knowing anything about it, because he never mentioned it. So I started to do some research, and then I thought the best way to get the story out there, because it's a huge Canadian story, was to write a book about it, which was released at the first British Home Child Day in Ontario at Upper Canada Village in 2011. And since then, I've been asked to do presentations, and I've been going around the country, really, from Calgary to PEI, giving presentations, talking with the British home children. And I always meet a lot of people who have never heard of this before. So it's obviously something that needs to be done.
Yeah, it's interesting that there are so many people that have home children as ancestors, but they maybe don't even realize it.
Oh, yes, and specifically in my case, it was my own father. So it was a very near relative to me, and yet I had no idea of any of this, and it's a huge Canadian story. They say that 10% of Canadians currently are descendants of British home children.
I think it's a very... a significant point that you made there about your father not talking about it. My grandmother and her brother and sisters were home children. We never knew the others, only my grandmother, and she would not talk about it. She mentioned only that she had been a slavey on a farm when she came over at age 10, but I'm gathering from what I have read that these children were many times treated as servants or worse, and considered second class compared to Canadian children, and hence many of them were reticent about their backgrounds. So their families really were in the dark, just as you were and I am.
Oh, very definitely. The families were left in the dark, and it's a matter of shame, really. They were ashamed of their background, or made to feel that way, ostracized in their communities. And I think that there's a quote in Anne of Green Gables that is, you know, quite apt in bringing that all to life. And it's, you know, how they were thought of by Canadians. And that was really also the impetus for me finding the title to my first book, The Street Arab. Now, the quote is, you know, I read Anne of Green Gables a long time ago and never, ever thought about that quote or what it meant. But it says, at first Matthew suggested getting a homeboy. But I said no flat to that. They may be all right, I'm not saying they're not. But no London Street Arabs for me, I said. Give me a native-born at least. There'll be a risk no matter who we get, but I'll feel easier in my mind and sleep sounder at night if we get a born Canadian. So even in that little quote there, you can see what the author was trying to do was to show how Canadians felt about these British home children when they came here, and that they were second or even third class citizens.
Yeah. And yet many did so well for themselves. It's interesting that even on tiny Amherst Island, there are quite a number of us who have these children as our ancestors. And when you start talking about it, it's fascinating to hear what they made of themselves from the difficult start that they all had in their lives, being separated from their families and indeed from each other if they came over as a set of two or three siblings. They all went to different places and none of them knew what awaited them. So many did so well, and it's been fascinating to hear how many of them turned out.
Well, I think that because they didn't talk about it, once they finished their term of indenture when they were 18, they didn't talk about where they came from or what this background was, and then they just carried on with their lives and managed to do well for themselves.
Mm-hmm. My grandmother became a nurse, and Dale here, I found out, has a fascinating home child as his ancestor who did extremely well in life and did something very significant for Dale and his wife.
Yeah. And in my case, it was my grandparents who had died before I was born, but they had a home child and raised him, and I don't know how old this person was when he first came to the family, but I always knew him as Uncle Fred. He was, a sign of respect because he was part of the family, and we always referred to him as Uncle Fred, although it was actually no relation to us at all. He was just a child who had been raised on the farm, but he decided that he would become a minister. He finished his high school, went to university, I think University in Toronto, and became a United Church minister. And down the road, he married my wife and I.
That's amazing.
Yeah, so he stayed, as part of our family over all those years, and was an important part of our family. But again, it was one of those things that really wasn't spoken of particularly, and I guess when I was younger and he was still alive, I hadn't thought to ask the sort of questions that come to mind now. What does he know about his family? And, you know, I don't know if he ever tracked down any of his family or whether he came over alone or not, but I know that he was an important part of our family, and my father and aunts considered him like a brother or sister. They were very, very close and remained that way all their lives.
You know,
that's certainly interesting to hear, and it's good to hear that he was included in the family, and that is the case in, you know, some of the some odd 120,000 children that were sent here, that they were accepted into some communities and that they were treated like part of the family.
Right.
It's really heartwarming to hear. However, I believe that the majority of the cases were just seen as workers and not as part of the family, and that's the reason why this story needs to come to light.
Right.
And all the stories.
Well, I know in my wife's case, her great-grandmother, I believe, was a home child. One of her great-grandmothers was a home child. And I think perhaps she wasn't treated quite as well at the time. Certainly was treated as a servant, I think, more as she was growing up. Although, in the end, she ended up marrying one of the sons of the family that she was raised with.
Oh. Yeah.
So, you know, it was, again, that was a long time ago. So I think the details are a little bit sparse, but I know it was a tough life. They grew up in the back country in Muskoka, and farming was a tough life up there. So
you made a very important point there, Dale. And it ties in with Sandra and Karen Mahoney coming on Sunday, that it's becoming late for any of us to find out these fascinating stories from our forebearers there, our ancestors, or these people that were associated with our families, because, you know, they are either up in years or gone. And it's wonderful that Sandra is getting out there to tell the story and get these conversations started while details can yet be found. People can write to Barnardo's in London and get some details, whatever there might be, but what happened to the children after they came here and in their later life, those are questions that we should be asking people while we still can.
That's true. That's very true.
Yeah.
And we don't need a lot of British home children anymore. However, there are lots of first-generation descendants out there, like myself, and perhaps we can garner information from them and, you know, to help find out what happened to them.
Yeah.
Well, I understand that when you come on Sunday that you and Karen will have information available to Islanders and to anyone else listening to the program on how they can research their ancestors.
Oh, absolutely. Okay. Our group is called British Home Child Group International, and we have a website, and we have a Facebook page called Families of British Home Children. And if you'd like to join or ask us for information or just wait until we come to the island on Sunday, we can certainly help.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, we're all very much looking forward to that event, starting at 1:30 on Sunday over at the lodge. There will be a presentation. There will be a display table of perhaps photographs and artifacts, and your books, of course, which will be available for sale, and also a raffle of your books. So lots happening there. Oh, and refreshments, of course, always an integral part of any island event.
Always.
It promises to be a very informative and enjoyable afternoon on Sunday. So we're very much looking forward to you coming.
Oh, thank you very much. Yeah, we're looking forward to coming too.
Well, that's, I think, thanks very much. I noticed Susan, my co-host here, just passed on a little note that noticing that September the 28th has been declared British Home Child Day in Ontario?
That's right. And that's where, for the very first one, my book was launched on British Home Child Day, September the 28th. This year, it falls on a Monday, so we are going to be having, our group is going to be having British Home Child Day at London, Ontario's Shaw Pioneer Village.
Wow.
And we actually have a two-day event there, and we will be on hand to help people with their research and also with artifacts and so on. I believe there's also one going on in the Brockville, Ontario area. So, you know, we would love to have you or any of the listeners come out to either of these events. Our event is free, and it's free parking in London.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Sandra, for taking the time, and we look forward to having you, seeing you next Sunday on the island.
See you Sunday.
Yeah, see you Sunday.
Bye-bye.
We're going to play a song for her.
Okay, what's...
That's the Reba McEntire song, The Greatest Man I Ever Knew, and I think it sort of speaks to the situation of a father that loves you but doesn't ever say it, or actually know how to show it, and I think it kind of ties into
that. Yeah. Bring out the tissues.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you very much, Sandra.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.